Welcome to System Mastery, where...
Sweeter than the spittle of humanity. Sweeter than even the plasm shucked from bitter baby marrow is the Socratic adrenaline coursing through the blood of the frightful.
It's System Mastery. It's a nice day to review horror games.
It's a nice day for a
ween.
It's a nice day to start again.
And welcome back. It's ween.
That's right. It's ween.
Mm-hmm.
No descriptor.
No descriptor this year because we don't have any more White Wolf books to sully ourselves with. And I'm actually kind of low on Palladium stock right now. I think I only have like one unreviewed Palladium book.
So now it's just time for generic ween.
We're just digging up horror crap that's cluttering up the shelves.
We're just digging up that ween.
Here it's... We're just digging that ween.
We here at System Mastery, we dig that ween.
We dig that ween. That's, by the way, that's our new t-shirt slogan.
We dig that ween. Goddamn, that would be a good t-shirt.
And then underneath that in parentheses, not the band, they suck.
And then below that, nah, they're okay.
And then underneath that in parentheses, no, seriously, have you heard Pushing Up Daisies or whatever it's called? No, they're bad.
And then the argument continues on the back.
Whole pack, it looks like tour dates, but it's just two people being like, no, Ween's fine. No, I mean, they aren't.
Give him a chance.
I don't want to give him a chance. I've given him three chances. Ween. So, like I said, well, our plan for this year's Halloween Extravaganza Fest is that we are going to just find horror books that we otherwise haven't been giving a chance to and give them a chance. And that starts off with Chill. Chill is a late 80s Mayfair Games book.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Mm-hmm. And it is generic horror. Judging just from the cover, you wouldn't know it's horror until you get to like the paragraph that's like at the bottom of it that says, Chill is a horror role-playing game for 2 to 9 players age 12 and up. And then, again, you wouldn't know it's a horror book if you read the book.
Yeah, I mean, it has its own setting, but even that's not really... horror as much as it is like you're a British accountant that might like admonish a vampire.
Yeah, notably you don't always kill the and even when you would kill the vampire, sometimes you just call the team to come kill the vampire.
Yeah, like found him anyway, bye.
I did my job. So okay.
Now what we read is on the back.
No, that was the thing that got us all excited. And again, let's get really into this. Sweeter than the spittle of womanity.
Oh, yeah.
Womanity is the kind of word you'd see in the late 80s for when people were not quite sure how to be feminists yet, but they were pretty sure it was poetry related.
Now, I have to ask, is the spittle of womanity vagina related?
Oh, you're wondering. Ooh, I had not thought that it might be fluids as opposed to just like.
I 1000% thought fluids.
My first thought was just lady spit. Like, just lady spit.
Just lady spit.
Not the acidic juices that do course through their vaginas. No, that had not occurred to me. But, you know, maybe. I mean, this is so. Whoever Rax is, who is the quoted attributed person.
Rax shows up a couple times in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, all of his quotes have, like, I don't think it's misspelling or weirdness because all of his quotes are specifically like weird little tweaks on words.
I mean, yeah, noticeably. Well, let's dissect
like
this one by one.
Adrenaline.
Yeah, it's just adrenaline, which instead of adrenaline.
Yeah.
And, you know, I even looked that up. That's the only research I did for this book. Adrenaline, not a thing.
Yeah.
So, but sweeter than the spittle of womanity, sweeter than even the plasm shucked from bitter baby marrow.
Man, are you shucking plasma, though?
I don't understand. From baby marrow? Okay, is baby marrow the bones of babies? Because that's where the marrow is, right?
Well, I mean, it's in the bones.
Yeah, but there isn't plasma. Well, okay, maybe I don't even know for sure what plasm is. I hear plasma and I think plasma, like blood plasma.
Yeah.
But it just says plasm, so maybe it isn't. Maybe that's just more another word for marrow that this guy's using.
I don't know.
But so sweeter even than the plasm shucked from bitter baby marrow is the Socratic adrenaline coursing the blood of the frightful. So, okay, Socratic, That's a pretty great word, actually. It's a mix like sucrose and necrotic. That's pretty great. That's
no, that's a good one.
That's a good one. That's like a dead sugar thing. I'm into it. Adrenaline, that's just nothing. That's not exciting to me. I mean, I guess maybe it's a made-up fear chemical. Maybe is Rax like the Scarecrow?
No, Rax is basically just some monster vampire thing.
That's fair. Coursing is spelled wrong.
Yeah, it is coursing like this is coarse to the touch.
Yes, which suggests that the sucrotic adrenaline is rendering the blood of the frightful grittier.
Well, which is what at least the veins.
Yeah, that's right. Just the veins. Baby Marrow is the sucrotic adrenaline coursing the blood of the frightful. Which means that it's...
Oh, I guess it is coursing the blood.
It's coursing the blood, which means it's like taking the blood and like chunking it a little bit, like just getting a little...
chunking it.
Like improperly stirred Kool-Aid now or something.
No, I mean, it's like you put the blood under a microscope and it looks like someone took just a very tiny sandpaper square to it.
The blood's just 30 grit now. But that quote on the back of the book had me all kinds of excited that this was going to be like a... one of the other kind of down-to-earth, gritty, urban 80s horror, like Nightlife that we did a while ago, for example. But then you open up the book and, oh, God, it is boring. This is a boring place. There is no honor here.
the book itself, I wouldn't say it's terrible.
No, it's competent. It just doesn't... I mean,
honestly, for being a book that came out in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, this is better than I would have imagined, mm-hmm. even from then.
No, that's fair. But to me, it's like if you're like bowling and you bowled a strike, but it was in the lane next to yours. And people are like, oh, nice. You did a great job. And you're like, no, but I didn't. I mean, I don't get any points for that. That just looked neat. Like, because this is a horror game that has, it's like they kind of forgot that it was, it's... the vast majority of the book is here's a regular role-playing game to play regular boring people.
This is a problem that we've had anytime we talk about a game that's either horror genre or comedy genre.
Yeah.
It's so hard to get that across in your book
mm-hmm.
without like tipping over into being almost a parody of yourself.
Yes, yeah, it's a problem. And you see this a lot, especially in games from this era, kind of late 80s, is that people are like, well, I have a great idea for a book. How about we do a horror thing, like kind of a Call of Cthulhu, but we'll make it Mayfair, you know? We'll make it our own. Well, how do we do that? Well, obviously, we're going to need to include the entire 300-page generic role-playing character construction guide that we put in all these books, and then at the end, we'll put in a section for how to roll for if you're scared.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. I'm going to say this has at least a little more incorporated into the baseline than like some of the times where you'd see something like a Palladium game that just slaps the same text that has been used 30 times into a book.
Yeah, that's very fair. I'm being a little vitriolic. Ultimately, this book has some intimations towards being a good horror game. There are ideas in here that are actually pretty good.
No, the author of this, there's a section in the GM area
mm-hmm.
that's like, what are the aspects of horror? What make people frightened? What makes something a like horror movie or a horror game?
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all the things like, oh, you want to deal with like issues of isolation or things that are alien or all of these like themes, rather than saying you should have a monster. It's like, no, play with these psychological aspects.
And that is great advice. And what I was trying to get to earlier was I was saying that horror games from this era tend to kind of they decide they're a horror game, then they build a whole regular role-playing game, and then they tackle the horror elements instead of what a modern horror game would do, which is how do we build this game in service of the theme of horror.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm ever going to find anything from the 80s that's going to say, oh, our actual mechanics are in service of the theme.
Yeah, no, their mechanics are in service of being a late 80s Mayfair game.
I mean, honestly, if a game from the 80s or 90s isn't our mechanics are D&D, I'm at least like, well, you tried.
Well, that's fair. I mean, and this one is. It's percentile driven. In fact, Why don't we talk about that? I guess the base mechanics of this game's world. You have, I believe, 8 statistics.
You do indeed,
and those are John.
And those are John.
Those are John's problems.
So it's,
he had the book most recently.
It's agility, dexterity, perception, luck, willpower, strength, constitution, and
You've added constitution, which isn't necessary.
Oh, it's stamina.
Yeah, that's right. It's stamina. It's agility, dexterity, luck, perception, whatever. Wait, hang on. PCN and PER. So which one's which there? Is one of them percussion? What are we doing?
Yes, that's right.
Anyway, I'm just looking at the character sheet.
Why would you do that?
Because I thought it would help, and yet indeed it did not.
Indeed it did not.
This so the is my
one
fault.
The one I was missing was personality.
Thank you, thank you.
Because I was like, I know I'm missing one, and it's personality. It is your charisma stat.
Yes,
there you go.
Exactly. There are 8 of the stats. They range in numbers between 0 and 100, but thankfully this is not a roll percentile to get your stats game. It's a point buy.
It is. You have to have minimum a 10 in any given stat, and the maximum you can have is a 90.
Yes. And then it does the standard thing for each one of the stats where it tells you it gives you an example.
Or it's like, what, 10 would be someone that can barely walk without falling down, and a 90 would be an Olympic level gymnast. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, great.
Great. Well, it's weird that you put that in perception, but sure.
Gymnasts just, known for their good perception.
It's just gymnasts all the way down. You can't fool me. No, but like the perception one, for example, is like at 90, you have the honed perceptive instincts of a Sherlock Holmes or Hercule Poirot.
But not both. One or the other.
You have to choose one. You can either enjoy the country air or not.
You can have the honed perceptive skills of the Pink Panther.
Oh, no, an aardvark.
Ah, crap.
Oh, wait. I wrote down the cartoon one.
In parentheses, the cartoon one.
Pink Panther, the cartoon one. What perception score is that? That'd be actually pretty great if their whole perception thing was just 10. You have the perception skills of the Pink Panther. 90, you have the perception skills of the Pink Panther. And it had to be the detective at the 10 because he was a bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
Yes, because he was a Peter Sellers character.
Indeed.
Indeed.
So the way that the point buy system in this works is everyone starts out with 100 character improvement points, or CIPs.
Yeah, the KIPs.
And you use those to get stats, you use them to get skills, and there is a merits and flaws.
Merits and flaws, and finally there is a psychic kind of system, which is called the way. So if you want,
it's fastballs the way. I couldn't not do it.
I couldn't not do it after you immediately because I was trying to get there first.
God damn it.
I'm in the middle of describing what it was, and I was going to work into how it's the, for example, you could gain the ability to see a paved with gold way out of here. Once you have access to the way, you'll never get hungry and you'll never be cold.
Yeah, but I'm not willing to set my shit up. I gotta beat you to the punch.
Just say the thing.
You're like, the thing. Anyway, the joke is the way. Fastball. Anyway, moving on.
Assemble your own jokes. I just threw the parts down.
Here, you do it. I'm tired.
Is it even called the way? I thought the bad one was the evil way and the good one was
it's the art.
The
That's
art.
Right.
Thank you, yeah. Yeah, fastball's the art.
Fastball's the art. So when you're looking at stats, every point, every CIP is worth 5 points in a stat.
Yes, and it doesn't get more expensive as you're going up. So if you're going high, you might as well go all the way high, because a 90 versus an 80 is only a difference of 2 points.
And the skills are three-tiered.
Yeah, they have 3 ranks to them, which are student,
teacher,
and master. Thank you.
And you get up to a plus 20 in a role, depending on what you have. So a student is 15.
Those are cumulative.
Yeah.
It's 15, 15, and then 20.
Yeah, that's why it's 50.
Yeah, well, you said 20. I'm sorry. For the record, it's going to come back to haunt us someday. So
Someday. You get a cumulative 50 total.
Yeah, there we go.
But 15, 15, and 20 are the three steps.
Yes, and it's plus 15, plus 15, plus 20, and otherwise the thing you are rolling on is almost invariably the average of two of your physical statistics.
Oh, God.
Statistics in general, rather.
It is always roll down for the average, and there are some skills that you can use untrained, and at that point, it's the average divided by two.
Yeah, and there are some, martial arts in particular, that if you want to be a martial artist in this game, congratulations. Martial arts is easy. You buy ranks in it just like you do with anything else. But
it's
your
twice as expensive.
It's twice as expensive, and your base rating is equal to the average of four of your eight stats.
Yeah, there's... the problem with this being... the merits and flaws system is nothing that's particularly useful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most of it is just kind of like, you have a little bit more money.
I'm ambidextrous. It doesn't matter in this game.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff in the merits and flaws just weren't game affecting enough for me to care.
Yes.
And I look at it, and the problem I have is it takes 80 of your 100 points to be a 50 in all your stats.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that 50 is the human average, which means if you want to be an average human, you have used up 80% of your points just to get there.
Also, notably, it is surprisingly expensive to, you don't get a whole lot of return from taking the drawbacks. The drawbacks are usually like, oh, you smell bad. You get 2 points to spend.
Yeah.
So they're not great.
The other issue with this is... in character progression, instead of experience, you just get more CIPs, and the skills cost the same. It's still 1 point if you want student and 2 for teacher and so on.
Uh-huh. 1, 2, and 4.
But for stats, now it's 1 point gives you 2 in a stat, which means it's 2.5 times better to buy stats at the beginning than it is to buy them later. So you should, outside of getting student level in whatever the base things you want to do are, you should pretty much just put every single point you have into stats.
Yes.
Because it's the most efficient thing you can do.
Yeah, because ultimately, once you start the game, I mean, we've run into this problem before, where there's a disparity in the point buy system between character creation and character development.
And I mean, usually it's something like the a lot of the White Wolf games have the scaling points so that you go, oh, it's much better to buy, say, a high rank in something at the beginning than to have 2 things at a middle rank and then, like, try and move it up.
Right.
Because it's going to cost more in XP than it does otherwise. But the fact that there's one thing that just doesn't do the scaling...
Yeah.
Like, if it cost twice as much for skills after you started, then I'd go, okay, well, then at least everything is about twice as much as it normally is.
Right.
Then you don't have to feel like you're missing out if you don't put everything into stats. But because it is that way, you're like, oh, every point I don't put into statistics is wasted.
Yes, exactly. Another problem you're going to run into with the advantage system in this game is one that's common to advantage systems in games, which is that it creates problems that are only solved by the advantage system that you wouldn't have noticed in the first place.
Yeah, if they hadn't called out, hey, you get to do this, you're like... yeah, but if you didn't say that was an advantage, I could have just done that.
Yeah, like, for example, this game's got eidetic memory, which is a common one you see in these, and it always comes down to, you can remember stuff that you saw in the previous scene without a roll. And it's like, but nowhere else in the book does you mention that you need to roll to remember stuff.
Yeah, I mean, at least in some games when they say the eidetic memory, it's just, you can ask the GM things.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, but at that point, you're making me spend points so that I can reliably ask for help from the person who is running the game.
To me, a person who has literally no memory in real life, like just a goldfish of a human.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's personally insulting.
Exactly.
Because I have a real problem with that in games, and I've had to, like, profusely apologize to DMs before. I'm like, look, I know you're going to hate me for this, and I want you to know that it's not personal, but I am not going to remember anyone's names at all. I don't remember your name.
Look, you've told me what town we're in, what the name of the most important nobles are, and who our contact is. I will remember fucking nothing of that. I can barely remember my own character's name without looking down at the sheet first.
Look, I could tell through the inflection that you were using to deliver the name of the town we're in that it was awesome and sweeping and you thought a lot about it. But in my head, I was just alphabetizing every dog breed I could think of. I'm sorry. I don't know why. But to me, that feels like it's a penalty that now I have to pay like two extra character points so that my character can have a memory just because I don't.
Yeah.
It's not great.
No, it is. I mean, it's the same thing like when you see the drawback that's class clown. You're like, oh, I just want to be an asshole in game. So I'll get a point and it allows me to do that.
So like we were saying, the basic mechanic for skill use in this game and for just about anything in this game really is to roll. There's two kinds of rolls, and the first one's really simple. You take the average of whatever two stats it is that add up to your thing. Like, for example, if it's gunfire, it's going to be a mix of perception and agility. You get the average of those two. You add the amount of points you get from being a student or a teacher or a master. If you're a teacher, for example, you'd say, like, all right, well, the average of my agility and perception is 50, so I have a 50. Then I add another 30 for being a student and a teacher. Then I have 80, so I'm rolling under 80 to shoot something successfully.
Yeah.
That's nice and simple. That makes sense and is great. Now, the other one, the other type, that's called a general check in this game.
That's when something would just be binary. You know, if you're like trying to pick a lock, there's not really gradations that you need to worry about. It's just, did you unlock this or no? So for anything that's a binary check, they just have you roll, and if you get under the number, great.
Right. Now, the other one is called a specific check. And specific checks, I had to read this page, I don't know, six times.
because you have no memory.
I have no memory, and I'm going to do a little sample of this page, if it's okay with you.
Just a
little sampling. Here we go. There are four types of successful results on a specific check. L is a low result, M a medium result, H a high result, and C a colossal result. If the number lies within 10% of the target percent or equals the target percent, the result is an L. Look at the tens digit of the target percent. If this digit is a 5, any number rolled within 5 of the target percent, including the target percent, yields an L result. If the digit is a 3, any number rolled within 3 of the target number receives an L result, and so on. Remember, this does not include any number that is higher than the target number, because any roll higher than the target number is a failing result. If the number rolled is between a 1 and 10% of the T percent, the result is a C.
Yeah,
it just goes on like that for ultimately, it's not super complicated. It really boils down to
look at the tens place.
Yeah.
And then if you are that number within from essentially failing. So if I have an 80 in something, then if I roll a 72 to an 80, then I get a low result. And if I roll a 1 through an 8, I get a colossal result. But then you have to find the numbers between those two and divide that in half, because that's going to be your medium and high rate.
Yes. So ultimately, it comes down to, there's a little table here that makes it easy. An L result equals the target number through parentheses, the target number minus the tens digit plus 1. Finally, algebra. It's not that bad. It's just weird that these numbers are going to constantly fluctuate because you have to factor in your penalties that you're dealing with and your bonuses you're dealing with. And then you have to work off the current percentage of the current total to determine what these target range numbers are. And then here's the real kick in the ass that comes out at the end of this. These are all four of them success results. So you get a low, medium, high, or colossal success result. And anything above the target number, you're still rolling under on percentile. So if you have a 50% chance, a 51 or higher is still a fail. But hey, good news. Effectively, so's an L or an M.
I mean, an L almost always in their examples is the L is usually like, you didn't do this, but you didn't fuck it up. And you're like, that's still a failure.
Yeah, sometimes it's like almost worse. Like one of the examples they give is you jump out of a hay loft to try and land in a hay cart down at like 30 feet below. On an L, you crack your head on the side of the hay cart. And I guess you don't die, but you're unconscious next to the hay cart. You're like, no, I succeeded in getting in the hay cart. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And honestly, some of the things they put in there like that is, oh, that should have been a binary roll.
Yes.
That, like, what's a colossal result going to be? You're really in that hay cart.
Well, no, in that case, the colossal result is you fall in the haystack. There are no other, or hay cart. There are no other effects. Ugh. Even the high result is you fall in the hay cart and take some damage.
Great. Sure.
We've seen that problem before too. That's what fucked up Prime Directive so badly.
Oh yeah, was all the gradations were just, did you not roll the best? Mm-hmm. Well, fuck you.
Yeah, in 90% of cases, when we were looking at Prime Directive, the Starfleet Battles game, it would be things like, oh, you have to check your tricorder result for I would like to fly the ship. On anything other than the ultimate best success possible, it's you failed. Roll again. You got a medium success. All right, well, you didn't fly the ship very well, so you have to try again, and you can't do it for another minute.
Yeah, the bribery example from that, where it was like the two lower success results were, he doesn't like what you're offering, but he probably won't tell on you. And the second success was, he doesn't want to deal with you. Maybe you can get a better deal for him. I'm like, these were both successes!
Yeah.
Fuck you!
We're seeing that again here in this book, except it's... roughly, it's almost exactly as complicated. It's just a different kind of complicated.
Yeah, and the problem with things like that is you already have a system that wants to throw penalties at you because that's a big thing horror games love to do.
Yes.
It also makes it so that you have to average basically everything, and there's a bunch of nonsense for every different skill.
Mm.
So you kind of want all of your stats to be good.
Mm-hmm.
So you're spread a little thin, yeah, and to then say your numbers that aren't great to roll against are then penalized further because just kidding, that isn't actually a success,
yeah,
sucks more.
No, it's so weird. I mean, you've heard of MAD, right? Like, it's a D&D term you hear from time to time.
Yeah, Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
It's Mothers Against Drunk Driving, although that requires two Ds, and I specifically only said one, but thank you. Yes, and.
Yes, and.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving. It's one word.
Driving.
Driving. It was just driving. That's Sylvester Stallone driving.
I mean, it's Mothers Against Drunk and then parentheses driving.
It's Mothers Against Drunk, and then parentheses, Ween isn't a very good band.
It's Mothers Against Drunk, parentheses, Ween isn't a very good band, parentheses, just give them a little bit of a chance.
No, okay. That usually stands for multiple ability dependency, and it describes a situation where your character needs too many of their stats to be good, to be effective, and it especially applies primarily in games where there's another character you can build instead that doesn't have MAD.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, a wizard just needs intelligence. You can dump everything else, just take intelligence. But a monk will often need, like, I need to take dexterity, constitution, wisdom, probably charisma, maybe some strength.
Yeah.
And it's always, like, the worst example was back in 3rd edition D&D was the two psychic classes they initially created, which needed all six stats.
Yeah, you're like, oh, all your powers are based on any given stat. You're like, oh, fuck you.
You didn't think about this at all, did you, you idiot game designers? But in this game, at least everyone has multiple action attribute dependency for everything they're ever going to roll. So you're all down in this dumb shit stew.
Yeah, the sad bit about it is when you get to the part that has the monsters, they also have to roll for all this shit.
I definitely want to talk about, especially when you're talking about the evil way. So why don't we, as long as we're still doing character creation, let's talk about the art.
Yeah. So the art is essentially psionics.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of mysticism, but mostly it's like, I have telepathy as a school of powers, or I have, yeah, like, telekinesis, or whatever.
If you've read Palladium's Beyond the Supernatural, you have a rough concept of the power scale they were willing to throw you as a bone in this game.
Now,
if you wanted some psychic powers.
The problem is, you have to really get a couple of stats very high, especially willpower, because your abilities use willpower up to use them. So if I have, say, 80 willpower as a score,
yes,
that means I have 80 willpower points to spend.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go ahead and use some ability that takes, and it's all variable, so it's like, oh, this takes 2d10, mm-hmm, and I fuck up and roll 20. I'm like, oh, great. I just tried to talk to some guy's brain, and it used 20 of my 80 points.
Yeah. Oh, and then I rolled a low success, so it didn't work. Great.
Oh, yeah, I rolled low success, so he hears some sort of whisper but doesn't know what it is. Mm. Fuck you. But the problem with that is willpower for anything that isn't a skill roll is based on your current amount. So things like fear checks,
mm-hmm,
are based on rolling against your current willpower.
Yep.
So a wizard or a psychic or whatever in this game is like, ooh, I cast a couple of spells and now I'm afraid of everything.
And they're not even good spells. Like, basically, imagine, you remember John, obviously, how useless...
I do remember John.
You remember my buddy John? Do you remember how useless Deanna Troi was?
How useless John was?
He was a worthless piece of crap.
Just a real sack of shit.
But you know how useless Deanna Troi is most of the time, right? She's always like, Captain, I sense hostility about some, like, frothing at the mouth Romulan or something.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if just... So she's roughly the equivalent of the sensitive psychic that you can basically be in this game. But imagine if Picard was flanked by, like, six of her, and each one of them had a different branch of psychic power, and you'd have an idea of what the art is like. There'd be one who's like, oh, Captain, I'm a telekinetic psychic. Here, let me hand you your pencil. And the next one, I'm the healing one. Let me peel the skin off your sunburn. It's as good as I can do.
Yeah.
Can you heal the sunburn? No, I can peel the loose skin, though. And it's in big, satisfying pieces.
It's real good. You're going to want to roll that around. One of the only ones that's even remotely useful is the protective school.
Yeah.
And that's because it actually gives you something you could use. Because if you get, I've got telepathic empathy, I need to get a good roll in order for this to even work.
Yeah.
And then when it does, if I'm at student level for this particular power, it lasts one round or 6 seconds.
Yay.
You're like, that guy's kind of angry at the moment. Maybe he just doesn't like the beer he has. I don't know. This power sucks ass.
Yeah, no, they almost all do. And you have to roll to use them, and it's often a specific check with a unique set of results for each different power.
Yeah.
Which is a bad thing, because that means you have to write all that crap down or else get ready to constantly be flipping through the book during the game.
Yeah. One last note on character creation that I wanted to mention, if you didn't have anything else on the art.
I don't have anything on the art, but I did want to talk about the templates for your career.
That is sort of what I was going to, because the game presents three ways you could play.
Yeah, yeah.
One is, just take the characters we made, play those.
And they're terrible. And they basically have all the complexity of the characters in the board game Clue, not the movie Clue.
Yeah, it's just like, what is this? This is Boris Spassky, the Russian spy. And you're like, ugh.
I'm Professor Veronica Van Sexy.
Great.
Thanks. Yeah. Although, you know what? That's not in there, and Veronica Van Sexy is a great name. So.
TM.
Hashtag Veronica Van Sexy. I think we might know what my bonus content character is.
the characters that they have, pretty much shallow garbage.
Yes.
So
with ridiculous art.
Yeah. So you're like, okay, let's not do that. The third option is to make your own character, like we were just discussing.
Like some sort of plebe.
The second one is to take the pre-made characters and pencil out some stuff and write in new things. I'm like, that's not a third option. That's
the first option again, with some extra farts on it. I don't understand what you were thinking here.
Yeah, that's just use our templated character or... use our templated character and you're allowed to change the name? You're like, oh, come on. Don't say that's three options for character creation.
I mean, I understand where they were going with it. They were like, we pretty much covered all the bases with the characters that we put into the game for you. Because the only other thing you really need to know about character creation is that there are job types that you can take. They include things like, oh, I'm a janitor, I'm a soldier, I'm homeless, I'm a child, I'm a dilettante, that kind of stuff. Which give you some skill recommendations, occasionally a bonus of some kind.
Usually it's how much money you have.
How much money you have is the other big one.
If you decide, oh, I'm going to be a doctor, there are requirements for like, oh, you need to have at least, you know, these skills at student in order to get this much money. And if you have them at teacher, you're getting bumped up to this much money and so on.
Yeah, because there's student, teacher, and master levels of each one of the careers as well. And they don't necessarily coincide one-to-one with the skills. So, for example, if you're a master-level doctor, you don't have master-level in all your doctor skills. You probably have one in, like, general medical doctor. And then some of the other skills, you'd be like, oh, well, you know, I have student in driving, because it's not like a doctor has to be an expert driver.
Well, no, but that's not going to be on your list of skills you need to be a doctor.
It will be. It'll just be at the student level. They keep it pretty simple. But as you go up in the ranks of your job, you also get more money. They have a little chart that's like, oh, you have... poor, struggling, fine, and rich is your options.
And
the only way to get rich is the master tier doctor or the generic rich boy dilettante result.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I'm just a guy who is rich as a profession.
I'm Veronica Van Sexy.
God damn it.
Yes, of the Sex Beach Van Sexies.
Oh, Sex Beach.
Florida's a horrible place.
So the various things you can be background-wise are weird.
They're boring. I mean, it's fine.
Especially when you look at it and you go, yeah, but who's picking homeless?
I mean, I understand why it's there, because homeless characters tend to make sense in a horror genre game, especially once we get into the final piece, the missing piece of the puzzle when we're discussing Chill as a game concept. Chill is all about an organization you can play as called Save. It's this game's meta plot is that every kind of monster is real and they're stalking the earth quietly and it's a big secret and no one knows except for one society of British rich upper class stiff upper lip type dudes from the 1300s that gave themselves a Latin name that coincidentally acronyms out to Save.
Yeah, the first person to figure out that psychic powers are real and also monsters was some Irish guy.
That story is bananas McQuack. It's like he's watching some Arabs traversing on a beach, and then there's some worse Arabs that are about to jump them for money, and he's like, I wish I could help those Arabs, and then he gets a voice in his head that's like, you have helped us, for Effendi. And you're like, oh god, don't liberally sprinkle Effendi everywhere. don't get that shit in here.
It's especially weird because then he's like, oh, and I met them in a bar later and they didn't speak my language at all. And I'm like, then why wouldn't it have translated the... Okay, whatever, fuck it.
Also, how did you do that? Because you clearly haven't been training your skills as a long-range psychic communicator, which means at best you sent them a six-second message that was like, fear.
Or, for some reason, they had a psychic in their squad who was like, oh, I'm constantly just reading the minds of anyone about a mile or two that way.
Yeah, I can't... It's important that I'm not able to see them.
Oh, yeah, and... obviously, I'm never trying to read the mind of anyone who might be behind us.
So, this dude is like, well, psychic powers are real. Also, vampires are real. And so he became the cowboy poet laureate of the Old West.
Like, he gets together with other people, and his whole thing is, I'm a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and scientifically prove to people that this is real.
And he can't, because otherwise, where's the horror game? Although, honestly, that'd be a pretty great horror game, is a world where everyone knows that every horror element is real.
They're like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, you don't go outside, dummy.
What are you, some kind of idiot? There's mummies out there.
It's just mummies. That's the one real thing.
That's the one real thing. And it's like, all right, now remember to put your food up, because you don't want mummies coming by in the night.
You have to tie it at least 30 feet in the air, or it's going to get cursed.
You're going to wake up with beetles in your food.
Wear bright reflective clothing so that mummies think that you're oncoming cars.
Remember, mummies are more scared of you than you are of them.
You may have never actually seen a mummy in the wild, but a mummy has seen you.
If a mummy begins to charge.
Remember, make yourself look bigger than the mummy.
Try to play undead.
Bang pots and pans together and be assertive around a mummy.
I'm just imagining a mummy going through someone's fucking trash can like, hey, get out of here.
Curse.
No, you. Ding, 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 ding. Don't you curse me. Get out. You go.
Never get between a mummy and a smaller mummy. That'll activate its mummy bear instincts.
God damn it. So, Save is an organization that basically came out of this one Irish scientist who managed to convince a few others. And then they went and proselytized it as well.
And then they basically became the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen for a while, like all the way through the late 1800s into the early 1900s and so on.
They're like, oh, we've got little offices around places, and we send out our envoys to go check into deeds most foul.
It's all quite dashing, don't you know? It sounds kind of like, yeah, like a cool League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Hellboy type situation.
We've got Lord Strange, and he's here to help.
And the mummy boy.
Come on, mummy boy.
It's just a dog. It's just a mummified dog. It's just their team.
Bark.
Okay. But you know, you think, oh, that's kind of a neat concept. So there's this group of, like, dashing British dudes, and they hire anyone. They, like, hire homeless people and kids. And anyone who will believe them, they hire them, give them a kit, and send them out into the world to try and find monsters.
Well, yeah, because they're like, oh, if you have a brush with the unknown, then you can go ahead and join us because you believe.
One of the worst things you'll find in this section is the part where it's like, oh yeah, homeless people make great envoys for SAVE because they're always down in the street, like where the mummies are and so on. Like they see the things that happen.
They're down in those mummy gutters.
You know, in the mummy district.
Yo, let me get in those mummy gutters.
Oh, whoa. So now I'm just picturing that juice from that unearthed tomb. But there's no mention of, like, and then they get paid and they get houses.
No.
It's just, no.
They make great envoys because they work for peanuts.
We hire homeless people and we keep them that way.
Look, we found a little orphan boy who once had a run-in with a demon. Fuck this kid, though. He can go try and find us more.
I heard he's got a nice awning to sleep under or something. Chip, chip, good enough.
Stiff upper lip, young lad.
And just when you're thinking, okay, this is actually kind of a fun premise, like to play as sort of a Hellboy team with a British-y flair to it.
Well, yeah, because you see that and you're like, oh, that's the hook.
That's
like,
the hook.
How do I get my players to go find goofity nonsense? And you're like, oh, every adventure is just SAVE saying, hey, we've got reports that Carmen Sandiego is...
Listen here, gumshoes.
Carmen Sandiego is in Nigeria.
You're going to need to know three things about Nigerian royalty to proceed, gumshoes.
The warrant.
Okay, so... But right when it gets interesting, when it hits like 1990 or so, which is when the book is set, vampires invade and burn down all the SAVE headquarters. They're gone. It's this huge section of the book dedicated to telling you all about it, and it's just gone.
Yeah, and then they're just like, oh yeah, the headquarters got burned down, and that caused a collapse in leadership of the national headquarters that are around every country, and then that caused a breakdown of the local headquarters that are at various cities. And like, okay, then what the fuck does it matter? And they're like, oh, maybe they'll still give you a camera and a flashlight and tell you to go find spooky stuff.
Yeah.
Like, for what?
Yeah, they're like, oh, well, if you join SAVE now, you still get the SAVE Envoy kit, which is a notepad, two pens and a pencil, a box of bullets, a smaller box of silver bullets, an umbrella, a flashlight, and I believe the last thing was like a phone.
A bag of crisps.
A bag of prawn and lamb flavored crisps.
Ooh, you've got me.
Oh, I'm on board just for the crisps.
I'm just here for the crisps.
Yeah, can I join, get the crisps, and quit immediately? Ah, yes, it is a loophole in our system.
Ooh, unfortunately, yes.
Unless, of course, war were declared.
I'm sorry, you've been conscripted, old boy.
You must go out and fight 14 haunted elephants.
These mummified elephants, larger than the last. Toot, I can't do elephant noises.
Yeah, my daughter does a really good elephant.
Yeah.
It's actually very cute for a little one-year-old.
Yeah, I can't.
But I'm not going to drag her in here because she's at the park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there you have it. Just know in your hearts of hearts that my daughter does a cute elephant noise for a one-year-old kid.
Just think of the cutest one-year-old elephant noise, and that's it.
That's it. That's what it does. That's what she does. Okay, so...
So yeah, SAVE, while it would have been...
Neat?
A neat idea, is now like, oh, it's crap. And instead of it being like, you're part of the ground floor team trying to rebuild it, they're like, oh no, there's an NPC who's doing that. You just get to go off and Scooby-Doo it up. And you're like, but what are we getting out of this? If someone's like, here's a pad of paper and a pencil, can you go tell me if things that will murder you are in that building? I'm going to be like, no, go fuck yourself.
You get the crisps, John.
The crisps. Would you do it for a Scooby crisp?
They're special British crisps in flavors you can't get in the U.S.
It's true.
Yeah, they're like steak and kidney pud flavored crisps.
Steak and kidney pud.
Also available in Navratom Korma flavored crisps.
Oh, that's right. All you can get here in America is Sean White's pickled dick flavor.
Hey, don't you cheapen the legacy of the cocktail, the Sean White's pickled dick.
Listeners, there was a moment earlier today where we were having lunch and
what was the concept of a bingo card specifically for crazy crap that you see on the walls at restaurants came up.
Yes.
So there was like, oh, that picture of Einstein sticking his tongue out and the Mona Lisa, but she's got a big mustache and is eating a hamburger.
And we got into the differences between like the modern ones, which would have those, the classic ones, which are all like free lunch served tomorrow and then the coffee, 5 cents.
Yeah. And then the punk ones, which are like, you know, a bench made out of skateboards and 17,000 stickers all over everything.
Yeah, there's just a ton of like shitty band and skateboard shop stickers everywhere.
Yeah, and somehow, because my mouth doesn't work like a human mouth, I was like...
Hanging
from the rafters is Sean White's pickled penis.
And I was like, oh yeah, but that's just a drink they serve. Sean White's pickled dick is just their signature cocktail.
And we've gone around to the process of defining what's in a Sean White's pickled dick. If you want to make one yourself...
if at home you want this, and you shouldn't.
You should. It's a half and half mix of any kind of red Kool-Aid and pickle brine, and you put a Vienna sausage in there.
For stirring.
For stirring. It's just for stirring. There is no alcohol. Do not ask for... Sean White would not want you to have alcohol.
No.
Or his pickled dick.
Can I interest you in Sean White's pickled dick?
I mean...
It is the featured cocktail of the day.
Tis the season.
I mean, I guess.
So, sorry about all that digression. Crazy crap on the walls. Good times. You don't even get to play as a cool save thing. You got to play as the remnants of it. You're like, what are you? Oh, I'm an accountant, but I'm very scared of mummies. And sometimes mummies scare me, and I guess I have a friend who's a British guy that used to be part of a cool organization, but now he's not. It's basically like having my own Giles, except shittier.
Speaking of being scared of things,
yep, that's the last
fear checks in this.
Yes. So one of the hallmarks of old horror games is that they have a propensity for taking control of your character away from you, because what could be scarier?
Yeah, than golf with a Gatorade.
What could be scarier than playing a game of golf with Sean White's pickled dick? Was actually not a great band.
The weird thing about this is... I know that a lot of horror games did this, where they're like, we've got sanity mechanics or fear mechanics or something where the unknown shows up and you have to roll, and, you know, we're really into the whole idea that, oh, you can't process how crazy this is and it breaks your worldview and you've got to either, like, run or break
gibber.
Down.
Yeah.
And this has a fear roll.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to not be fucked by it.
Yeah, even like the critical successes, you're just a little scared. You only have to run away for like two rounds.
Yeah, it's, oh, colossal success. You're scared for a round and have to either cower or run away. I'm like, that's the colossal success. So no matter what, there is no way. Even if I'm fucking Blade and I'm out there, I'm like, I hunt vampires. And then some vampire shows up and I'm like, ooh, Mr. Darcy.
Yeah. What news of the season? Doot-doot-doodle-doodle-doot-doodle-doodle. I don't know if we've explained that one on the show yet either.
Fuck it. That's for me.
That's just for John. I'll explain that in the Discord. Okay, so... So, yeah, and the problem is, it's like, oh, yeah, everything you might encounter is very scary, even if you've encountered it before.
Even things that aren't supernaturally scary are scary.
Yeah.
If you run across, like, a box of snakes... That's going to freak you out.
Yeah. So that's not a great situation. Also, the roll is hard. Also, you can take cumulative rolls. So if you want to spend the entire fight running away and cowering in fear, that's fine, because every time the monster does anything, that's a fear check.
And as I mentioned earlier, if you are using any of the art, that's sapping your willpower, which is what you are trying to roll against.
Uh-huh, so congratulations, you built a psychic a shaggy.
Yeah, you're like, ooh, I'm going to use this power to protect me from the vampire. But now that I'm protected from it, I need to run away from it.
Oh, my power didn't work, and instead I got an enormous sandwich.
Oh, man, I want that psychic power.
Summon enormous sandwich?
Yeah, just get big sandwich. That's my favorite Juggalo, big sandwich.
I feel like that is your Juggalo name.
That's me. That's the Juggalo, that's big
your,
sandwich.
That's your Juggle Sona, I think they're called.
I think they might be called.
They might be known as Juggle Sonas. Let us know if we're wrong. And also tell us what your Juggle Sona is in the comments.
Please.
Smash that like and subscribe button.
Please give us some art of your Juggle Sona.
Don't forget to ring that bell and tell us your Juggle Sona in the comments below. Okay, one other thing I really wanted to talk about is the evil way, which is the monster psychic power equivalents. And honestly, when I was saying earlier that this book does have some mechanics to it, actually, there's two more things I want to talk about. Number one of which is this. It's basically, you know how horror movie monsters tend to have kind of a set of trope-derived powers? Like, notably,
I mean, some of them are sort of like classic things. So you'd say, oh, yeah, you know, a vampire, they can, like, hypnotize you or turn into a bat and stuff like that.
And some of them are cinematography powers, like how Jason is always right behind you.
Yeah. You're running way faster than he is,
yeah,
and yet you run into him down the road.
Yeah. All of those are representations of the evil way. Now, here's the problem. This is neat. It really does a great job of encapsulating most of the horror movies that were around at this time. By the way, I've never seen any individual media item give a bigger blowjob to the original Halloween movie than this book.
Well,
this book is crazy into the first Halloween movie.
I mean, to be fair, this actually came out in the 80s, so it isn't like, oh man, Halloween's like 20 years old. It's like, hey, Halloween's fresh, baby.
That's true.
This is only like 8 years old.
Help me out here, John, because I've never seen any of these. Is Halloween 1 the one with Johnny Depp in it?
No, that's Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th.
Or no,
okay.
That's Nightmare.
Okay.
Friday the 13th is Kevin Bacon.
And Halloween is nobody.
And Halloween is Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, right. Okay, so Jamie Lee Curtis is in there. Yeah, Halloween is the ones with just some murderer dude.
It's Michael Myers.
Okay, it's just Mike Myers. All right. They are so...
No, Michael Myers. It's important to say not Mike Myers.
Definitely not Wayne.
Definitely not Garth.
Camera one, camera two. It's that guy. Yeah, okay. I'm up to speed. No reason to tell me any more about it. The dude who goes to the donut shop and finds sexy Asian ladies at the steam room. I'm up to speed. We're fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah, everything's great.
Everything's great. Okay, as if. Sha.
What am I going to do with a gun rack?
That was such a dick thing to do. Just put ties or whatever on it, you piece of shit. It's just a shelf.
I do not have a gun, let alone many guns, which would necessitate an entire rack.
God damn it. Hey, come here for a minute. That part where Ed O'Neill takes the camera and walks away with it is... Jeez, I'm sorry. I don't know why we're talking about Wayne's World so much. The evil way, here's the one number one problem with what is ultimately an interesting list of powers that monsters could have. They have to roll to see if they work using specific checks, and they constantly fail at them. So you'll have all these scenes where you're setting it up, you're like, all right, and as you back needlessly into the dark corner in the hall of the spooky abandoned house, you suddenly bump into, roll dice, I guess an armoire or something. There's nothing.
There's nothing there.
So okay, never mind. I guess we're going to go to bed and try this again tomorrow.
I mean, part of me almost likes the idea of those being, when you fail, they're the fake scares.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, if I get this, then Jason appears behind you. But if I fail the roll, it's you open a door and it's a closet and something falls down on you.
Yeah. Or it's just one of those bullshit cinematography noise checks where you're just like, oh, you backed up and okay, it failed. Nothing happened. A crow kills itself on the window all of a sudden for no reason.
Bus hisses next to you.
What? A spaceship door opens loudly.
Yeah.
It goes, because if there's one thing the future's all about, it's loud-ass doors.
Goddamn right. That's what I imagine if we got to a point in our development as a human race and we're like, oh, we're going into space now, we've got lasers and we've got like space doors, even if they were completely silent, which a laser would be, they're like, oh, we're adding noisemakers to them.
Oh,
go
yeah.
fuck yourself.
That's canon in the vast majority of sci-fi stuff. They go, oh, the noise comes from just speaker. Like, that's a Riffs thing. Riffs specifically mentioned that Wilkes installs speakers on their guns so they make
cool
pew-pew
noises. Because
it's
more satisfying to hear a pew-pew when you do it.
Yeah, exactly. But the door thing, I mean, honestly, you know me and my horror movie particulars. I don't really like almost any of them unless they're space stuff.
Uh-huh.
And part of the reason I like the space stuff so much is the ridiculous bullshit aesthetic of horror spaceships. Where it's like, oh, we're flying around in a fucking beef factory. It's everything's just heavy pipes with shit dripping out of them, and all the doors open like garage door noise.
Yeah, if there's one thing you want on your vehicle traversing the dark void of space, it's a lot of dripping.
Yeah, big drip, like steam everywhere, drippy shit, huge clangy doors with bleeding rivets on them. That's that. I love that aesthetic. Concrete floors for no reason.
Oh, yeah. Once you get into it and you're like, man, who made this? What were they thinking?
How did they get an abandoned textile factory into space so they could fly it around?
And then I looked at the outside of the ship, and it was just an abandoned textile factory in space.
Someone stuck a tail on it.
That's the best thing about the Nostromo. Is that ship actually looks like hot garbage.
It does. It's the progenitor of the dirtbag space horror aesthetic, and ultimately it couldn't be better.
Oh, yeah. Because at least then when they show you the ship from the outside, you're like, oh, yeah, that looks like just someone's garbage crap that they put together in a junkyard.
Yeah, I'd say the other famous ship that does that really, really well is the Event Horizon.
Well, the Event Horizon is haunted.
It's got. I mean, do you see?
I do. Well, where we're going, we don't need eyes to see.
But I mean, ultimately, the ship has like from the outside, it looks like just an industrial crane assembly that is in space for no good reason. And then when you get inside, you see its warp drive is like spike based.
Yeah, you're like, oh, we have a pain engine for traveling faster than light. You're like, maybe don't
a. Plus, for the horror, if I were to live long enough to get to the post faster than light future, I'd build my ship that way, even if I didn't need to.
Also, the fact that they're like, well, how do you go faster than light? Well, we've got this weird spike ball in a round room full of
more spikes,
and no rail. If you open the door, you're gonna fall into the spike ball.
I mean, you're not supposed to go in there anyway. What are you doing in the spike room?
If the spike breaks down, I gotta go fix the spike.
I guess that's true. But, I mean, the spike room's not dangerous when the engine's not turned on. The spikes are too big to really get at you. It'd be like falling on one of those, like, things that they put under bridges in China so homeless people can't sleep.
I mean, that's still gonna hurt.
I know, it's not gonna be great, but it's not gonna instantly shred you like it would if the machine was turned on. So yeah, the Event Horizon, a fine ship design. Anyway, the other thing that I wanted to talk about in this book is the bibliography.
The recommended
reading is fantastic. It's a great list of you know, late 80s and earlier stuff. I think my favorite thing is the part where it goes, anything by Stephen King, anything by Anne Rice,
anything by Dean Koontz. Are you sure?
You really want to go that way?
Anything by Clive Barker.
I like the anything by Anne Rice and Stephen King, because you're like, all right, well, I guess it's a 1950s tale of friendship and finding dead bodies in the woods and spanking exotic princesses, then. You got it. Nothing scarier.
I guess our entire tale is things about early 50s rock and roll and also sex having?
I mean, that depends. If you want to go with Anne Rice as the author, but not her pen names, Anne Rampling and A.N. Rocalore, then sure, that might work, because then she just wrote a bunch of Vampire and Mummy and Taltos and stuff. But if you go by anything that Anne Rice wrote, you're like, ah, yes, she also wrote the Sleeping Beauty series, which is just three books of spankings.
The many and exotic spankings
of the princess.
Yes.
So maybe tighten that recommendation list up a bit. But otherwise, though, just a great list of horror movies from the 70s and 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And also a good breakdown of the things that people were scared of per decade.
Yeah, and that's, again, when I was saying that he has a list of things that make for good horror, things you want to keep in mind, ways that you can get this across to your players. There's a lot of advice in there as well of maybe you set this during a different time period than the modern day. There are all of these different things that people have been afraid of throughout history, and you play to that.
No, and he does a great job with it. Like 1950s, all the horror movies were cheapies, so that you know, baby boomers kids could make out in theaters. In the 70s, the Me Generation happened, and all of a sudden or late 60s, early 70s, and all of a sudden every horror movie was about haunted children.
Yeah, it's they look like us, but they're out to kill us of the 60s where everyone's freaked out about communism.
Yeah, so you have Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Or Village of the Damned.
Village of the Damned. But by the late 60s, early 70s, it's all Rosemary's Baby, Children of the Corn, The Omen. Everyone's afraid of haunted children.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh no, babies.
Yeah. So it's a pretty fascinating list that gives you a great idea of what like horror is like over the years, terminating around 1990.
Yeah.
Which is good, honestly, for the best, because if it was like, and in the mid-90s, everyone was a big fan of like Seth Green starring post-ironic pop horror. And in the 2000s, it was all torture stuff where Liam Neeson saves his daughter.
I mean, that's not horror. It is all torture stuff, though. As soon as you get
Saw
yeah. and Hostel and, to a lesser degree, Final Destination.
Human Centipede.
Yeah. Once you get into like, the 2000s, and now everything's just real graphic. We've got just a weird throwback to the exploitation era.
Yeah, in the horror Kinsey scale, when you hit the 2000s, you don't get to see boobs anymore, but instead you see a lot of fingernails come off.
That's the Kinsey scale.
And that's why the 2000s are the worst time to be alive. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
So chill.
Yeah, you know what? Let's get into the best and worst, John. Why don't we do that? Because we are nearing the end of this ween-tacular ween.
This ween goes on when I close my eyes.
That's good to know that the ween has object permanence. Well, like you do. You have object permanence.
I have object permanence. I'm not a baby.
And not a haunted one either.
I'm no haunted baby.
I mean, you're a haunted adult. You're a very haunted individual.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, you just look into my eyes and you're like, oof, that guy's got crust in there. Haunted crust. That's my favorite new thing from Pizza Hut, though. Haunted crust. Ooh, you gotta try it.
Oh, it's great. You can really tell how there used to be a pizza at Pizza Hut and it died.
Yeah, this is the crust of a dead pizza.
Okay, so in the Ween tradition, John, what would you say is your favorite thing about this game?
Oh, it's definitely the part where he talks about the various tropes and ways horror works.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's good advice.
And it's something that is necessary, I think, in one of these books, because even when you have a game that maybe sometimes tries to mechanically marry itself to the theme, like if you have a Dread that's like, this is a mechanic that is supposed to evoke the same tension that you're supposed to have in game,
mm-hmm.
but you also really want to have something in there that's like, if you're running this game, here's a guide so that you can actually make something that feels like a horror game and not just, all right, so there's a werewolf and he jumps out at you.
Right. Can I just say real quickly as an offshoot or as an aside here as well, is that I fucking love Dread and I fucking love Starcrossed, but ultimately the problem I get from both of them is all they really reveal to me is that me and everyone I know is fucking amazing at Jenga.
No, fuck you. I will never die.
This is not happening.
I am immortal.
This tower is nothing but single Jenga blocks. It's 12 feet high. Yeah. Okay. So that's your favorite thing?
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. What about you?
I'm going to go with the Evil Way listing of powers because, again, not because they're useful. They're not very great because they have a chance of failure and everything, but it's a great job of codifying the effects that monsters use. Especially not so much the classic stuff, vampires turn into bats or whatever, but the everyone you know is actually the bad guy, or
you look in a mirror and the ghost is behind you, and then you look and they're not there.
Yeah, all those things that are like
cinematastic. But can they see the like, cinematastic great taste?
Is it because they're squares? No, stupid.
No, you. Fucking idiot! You dummy! You dumb moron!
And then the commercial just ends in the middle of that. You piece of shit! And we're back.
Why don't you die? Why don't you lie down and die?
Well, that's the Cinnamon Toast Crunch commercial I want. But no, I like the ones that are like cinematography horror, because that's always been one of my favorite things about horror movies, is the tropes of how fear works in relation to cameras.
Yeah. Because that's one of the things that I have kind of gotten into in my Horrortoberfest reviews.
Great chance for a plug.
There are a couple of movies that specifically use the fact that we as an audience know the camera tricks that horror uses to then subvert that expectation.
I do appreciate that. When you do things like, it's a close-up three-quarter shot on someone over the shoulder with a lot of negative space above and to the left of them.
Oh, yeah. Or when you're like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm watching someone talk and they're like to the side and you have like a window right next to them and you're like, I'm waiting for it. Come on.
Or when you have a character pan into looking at something and then look away and then pan back to the same spot.
Oh, yeah. Always. Or like just, oh, we're going to have a close-up of someone's hand going into something.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the cinematography of horror a lot more than I like horror movies in general.
Well, horror is one of the genres that I feel, more than a lot of other things, has a real film language to it.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Do we ever sound pretentious now?
No. Okay. I mean, I'm going to be up my own ass about horror. Don't you worry about that. But I just love that. Unlike, say, a drama or a rom-com, there might be specific story beats that you have, but the actual filming of it is specific to that genre in horror that you don't get in other things.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because, for example, in my favorite genre of movies, 80s college boob comedies, the cinematography language is mostly, hey, look at these boobs.
You see them titties?
This t-shirt is wet.
Have you noticed? Let's find out.
Listeners, chime in. Like, like and subscribe.
Hit that bell.
Hit that bell if this shirt is wet. So there you go. What would you say is your least favorite thing about Chill?
I'm going to say the worst thing for me is the point by spread where you are so heavily incentivized to put everything into stats to begin with that it leaves a bad taste in my mouth to be like, yeah, there are just obvious ways that you might be an idiot in this game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It requires you to pretty much build a generic spread character, and it's not great.
No. So what about you?
It's definitely going to be the mechanics of the specific check. They are overwrought. They require you to do way too much math, and it also includes one of my absolute least favorite tropes in role-playing games, successes that are actually failures.
Yeah. I can't
abide those. They're not good. They don't lead to good game feels, and ultimately that's what a game is all about.
Yeah. I mean, if you're already at the point where you're like, "Oh, I had to make a roll and sweet, I actually made it, like against all odds, I did it." And then you look down and you're like, "Oh, but the result is still fuck you, you didn't.
It's an L, so oh, I guess you maybe don't die this turn, but you're definitely going to next turn." And ultimately, this is a product of the 80s and early 90s and 70s in role-playing games, is successes that are actually failures dominated the market. And now we've hit the point where everyone realized that games are about having a good time with your friends and telling a fun story. So instead, you see a lot more failures that are actually successes.
Yeah.
They're failures that move the story forward instead of successes that don't move the story forward, which is the worst thing you could possibly do.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you were to be like, okay, roll a lockpick check. Yes, I just barely succeeded. All right, you succeeded in unpicking the lock, but the door has three deadbolts.
Or you're like, oh, well, you only got a low result on that lockpick check, so you didn't unlock it, but your lockpick isn't broken. You're like, why would it be broken? What is happening?
Am I playing Skyrim right now?
Who does this?
Oh, Skyrim, where every lockpick is made of balsa wood.
And snap.
This one's a popsicle.
And snap. And snap.
I'm going to pick this lock with a Kit Kat. Okay. Those are our least favorite things. John, would you play Chill, a game so boring I had to look at the cover just now to remember what it's called?
No, of course I wouldn't, because
There's options.
As much as I would love to play a horror game, because that's my jam, there's better systems for it, and I don't like the mechanics in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume I'm going to get something from you that's similar?
Yeah, although I do enjoy the mic and the mechanics that are in this.
Oh, I don't.
In parentheses, Mike and the Mechanics is
not
actually
a very good band.
It's a pretty good band.
Nah, they're not very good.
Just go listen to All You Need Is a Miracle. It's a it's a pretty good song. Better than Ween, anyway.
Don't you besmirch Ween.
I will besmirch Ween.
Don't you smirch Ween.
I will dedicate my life to besmirching Ween.
And I will re-smirch them.
This is the origin story of our superhero and supervillain personas.
The re-smircher and the besmircher.
You are the Ween lover.
I mean...
Okay. No, I wouldn't play this game, so there you have it.
Great.
All right, well, there you go. That's the first Ween of this October.
Hell yeah. Now,
happy
we're not,
and joyous Ween to you all.
We are not done with the festivities.
Nope.
We are still going to make characters that are super chill.
Oh, yeah.
Lo-fi hip-hop beats to study to.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a bunch of the Pigeonhead and the Low Fidelity All-Stars characters. I said hallelujah to the 16 loyal fans.
Yeah, we're going to make some characters in this, and you can join us for a look that's a little more in-depth at character creation and the way in which our minds work.
Mm-hmm.
And all you got to do is join us on patreon.com/systemmastery.
At the $1 level.
A dollar. Would you slap my dick?
Sure. For a dollar.
No!
For a single dollar, you can join our Patreon. It's actually about $2 a month, really, when you boil it down. When you boil it down, it's about two
Boil it down.
It's about $2 a month, but that $2 unlocks 2 bonus content episodes, which is a pretty good deal.
It is. And it gets you access to our patrons only in our Discord.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good reasons to do it. It's super cheap. Great value for money. Good entertainment. Get in.
Good. Good, great, and good.
Great and good, and also great.
And also good.
It's great and good that you should do this. Join the Patreon. It's
great. Good that you sent them to the cornfield.
There are other levels available on the Patreon as well. There's $2 and $5 levels that unlock additional podcasts. But once again, that's patreon.com/systemmastery. Head on down there, support us, and unlock additional content.
Heck yeah.
Why not? We have a book coming out. Watch for that.
Yeah, you can go. If you go to systemmasterypodcast.com, our website, you can find links to buy the book. You can find our drive-through RPG link, which if you buy something from them, it gives us money.
Yeah. I would. I think now is officially okay to buy from them again. For a little while there, it wasn't okay.
Yeah.
That's
why I'm back on board.
It's hard to keep track exactly of whether or not they're selling some shit by some asshole.
And also, you can find all of my horror reviews for Horrortoberfest there.
Yes, you can. And the Jumbotron link if you wanted to buy an ad. And on and on and on as it goes.
And so on, ad infinitum.
Uh-huh. But instead of dealing with all that, any more plugs, let's just say thank you so much for listening. The 3 traditional joyous blessings of Ween to you all. I will not explain them. Do not try to ask me to. I can see it over there.
I can see you already working it out in your head.
You know full well I don't remember them.
You know. I could barely remember the old Ween traditions, let alone this new Ween.
This new, just regularly titled Ween.
This standard Ween.
It's the standard Ween-viation.
I've got this very precise nuclear clock Ween for you.
Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful Ween week. Nice day to review horror games. It's a nice day for a Ween. It's a nice day to start again.